Keeping an eye on your wallet is what we do best. It's the Money Matters Radio Network. Send the Money Matters team instant feedback at moneymattersboston.com or call in with your questions at 888-205-2263.
Welcome back into the Money Matters Radio Network Mid-Afternoon Edition. June Knight, your host and my co-host every Wednesday from 2 until, actually from 3 until 4 o'clock, excuse me on that, Brendan King, Estate Preservation Law Offices out of Worcester, Massachusetts. Welcome back, Brendan.
Thank you very much. Hey, I have a something I wanted to ask you. Did you know about the underground parking before today?
You know what? I just found out a couple of weeks ago, and I've been working here for about 4 months.
Right out of the gates, I got to ask you about this because I'm coming in shaking off like a Labrador retriever. I get in here, and then I find out about the underground parking. Okay, so now...
When and how did you find out?
Well, I came in. As I came in, it was mentioned to me because I did that shake as soon as I got in and, you know, freed myself of all excess water. And then it was pointed out that, hey, there's some sort of underground secret code parking.
There is, because I'd been here many months before I'd found out about it. So it is kind of a secret type of a thing. So
they let you... first hurricane first,
well,
I guess. Yeah.
But they let you in on it, so that's kind of a big deal, I guess.
It's a big deal.
Did they whisper? Did they take you side?
Yeah, you know, they kind of did a little bit of, come on over here, got something to tell you. I thought I was in trouble for maybe swearing on the air or something. And to my surprise, it was about the underground parking. It's like a back cave.
HR?
What's it like down there?
You know what? Yeah. I have not been down.
Okay.
I'm afraid.
Yeah. What?
Only because this building doesn't look like it houses a garage.
Right.
It's almost like too good to be true in there.
That's what I heard. It's a round back. And I'm like, a round back what? So I went over round back and more I saw it. Look like it's just a
landscaping.
Yeah,
that's
landscaping.
Yeah,
yeah. It's got to be secret.
So it's like a Star Trek type of a thing. And
yeah,
you know, it's somewhere in there, but you can't see it.
Yeah, you know, if it was inside, it would be like, you know, you move a book and a door would slide.
Right.
Or yeah, but it's outside, so I don't
know. Let's ask Matt, the producer, if he's been to the underground parking garage.
I have.
You have?
Oh yeah.
You haven't told me about this.
It's the only way I can get in here on Saturdays.
Ah. There you go.
You mean get into the building?
I got codes.
Oh, okay. Well, so what's it like down there? Is it kind of creepy?
Yeah, there's nobody down there on Saturdays.
It's quite scary, actually. I wish I didn't have to go down there.
My goodness. Okay, so today I know, Brendan, we're going to be talking about trusts, and I don't know if you've heard, but in the news, an appeals court will hear arguments. Actually, they heard the arguments today, or they've been doing it now because it's in California. Mm. Whether Michael Jackson's father should be allowed to challenge the administrators of his son's already lucrative estate. Because
as you know,
he left Joe Jackson, his dad, nothing.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well,
so,
I guess you're entitled to do that.
Yeah.
You're entitled to do that. Believe it or not, and I think we may have mentioned this, is that you can leave out almost everybody that you want. You just got to be real specific sometimes to make it effective, with the exception of your spouse. You can't really do that. The spouse is, unless you contract around that. But, yeah, that's interesting. And I wonder what Dad has to say. I haven't really seen that, but I'm not really following.
Yeah, he's pretty upset. He was completely left out of it, as you know.
I think people get hurt more than anything else. But in this particular case, it's more of the money thing.
Well,
it's always about the money.
As
my professors used to say, it's always about the money.
He totally is looking to cash in on his son's death.
Yeah, and I think that's a good fit for what we're going to be talking about today because – I mean, in that particular case, no matter what he did, if he was going to leave somebody out like that, there's enough money in there where people are just going to throw in and throw down, if you will, and try to get in and jump into the fray. But, you know, the topic that we're going to be talking about today is trust. And one of the things that you can do to minimize the people coming out of the woodwork is to keep things maybe out of probate if you can.
Okay.
And that's one of the things that trust can do. And that being our topic today, I know we've kind of dabbled in the past couple of weeks on trust and the topic of trust, but one of the things that trusts do, and we'll step back for a minute and in a minute to talk about what a trust is, but is avoid probate.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about how to show on probate, and we're doing a little step process here. The show on probate we did, remember, probate asset is an asset in your name alone without a listed beneficiary. So one of the things our clients will do is set up what's called a living trust, a trust that exists while they're alive outside of their will, that they will put assets into, if you will, or really just change the titling on different assets that they may have to the name of the trust or to the trustee as owner of the trust. And when they die, they've already given that permission slip to the successor trustee to step right in, and they can keep things a lot more private. And if you keep things private out of the public eye and out of notices and court notices that need to be given, the more likely you are to have your way
And avoid probate
and keep things from getting contested.
Okay.
I think you're highly more successful in having your wishes done by having a trust.
And, you know, if you'd like to call the studio lines and ask questions about this and ask Brendan questions, it's 888-205-2263. Once again, 888-205-2263. So where do we begin?
So I probably should begin on what a trust is.
Yeah, tell us.
Yeah, and basically what a trust is that when you own something, you really own a lot of rights to it. What we call owning something in fee, a legal term for it. You own the rights to it now, the rights to decide where it goes, what you're going to do with it, sell it, you know, manage it, use it, if you will. There's a lot of rights that go to owning something. But when you separate title between legal, what we call legal and equitable title, you're actually creating a trust. No matter what you call it, you're creating a situation where the legal owner is known as the trustee. You may have heard that term before. So when someone's a trustee over something, they're the legal owner of the item. And then we have what's called the beneficiary. And they're the people who benefit from that asset. And so that bifurcation, if you will, is a separation in title. And when you do that, you're creating a trust, whether you have it in writing or whether you don't have it in writing. If that's the understanding, that's what you've created. So in its simplest form, that's what a trust is. Beyond that, we have several different types of trusts used for different types of reasons. Now, one of the things that a lot of people will talk about is, well, what if I have a revocable trust versus an irrevocable trust? And that's a common breakdown between different types of trusts. And obviously the difference there being is with a revocable trust, you can amend it, you can revoke it, you can change it. A lot of times we use those trusts to help us avoid probate, if you will. It's someone's basic living revocable trust. That's what a lot of people use as the modern day dispositive instrument possibly to their estate plan. Instead of using a will, they'll use this living revocable trust while they're alive to fund, use the assets while they're alive, and then when they pass away, those assets will then pass according to the terms of the trust with a successor trustee who can come in and manage those assets. So that's our living revocable trust. The irrevocable trust is just what it says, what it sounds like. It's irrevocable. You can't really change the terms of the trust. Now, sometimes we call something irrevocable, and it's not necessarily irrevocable. It doesn't mean you have to necessarily give up a lot of control over it, but it just means that you can't change the terms of it.
Ever?
But again, a lot of times nothing is what it seems. You may have an irrevocable trust where you've retained the ability to change the ultimate disposition of those assets once you're gone. And we see that quite often in the nursing home context when we set up an irrevocable trust to maybe protect our home or some assets from having to be spent down on the cost of long-term care. Mm-hmm. So what we'll end up doing is, say we put the house in there, when the grantor or the person who sets up the trust passes away and they've stayed in the house, what will end up happening is they may, in their will, reserve the right to change the ultimate disposition. In the trust, they may have said, well, I'm going to leave this 50-50 to my two kids, but then all of a sudden they reserve the right to change it, and what they've decided to do is skip the kids, and in their will they say, you know what, forget them, I'm going to leave it to my grandkids. Uh-huh. And so that you can actually change the ultimate disposition. So in a way that is somewhat revocable or amendable, but by its face is still an irrevocable trust because you've only reserved a certain ability to amend it. So I guess in a way it's almost a semi-amendable or a semi-revocable trust. So
is that the more popular trust for people to get?
You know, that is a very popular trust. I'd probably say the most popular would be the revocable living trust.
Oh, okay.
Because a lot of people have that just almost as common as wills these days to use as their modern-day dispositive instrument on their estate.
And, Brendan, why would somebody use the revocable living trust rather than the will?
Well, a lot of times to avoid probate, as we had just said.
Okay.
And really what our wills will, you can actually have wills, trusts inside of wills, believe it or not, and they are called testamentary trusts. So when we're talking about living trusts, We're talking about trust that we're creating while we're alive, that exists while we're alive, and we're and are created outside of the will. But when you have a will and you can have a trust inside, that's called a testamentary trust. So believe it or not, you can actually have a will and a trust, and with the trust inside the will. It gets kind of complicated. I can appreciate that. But one thing that, you know, to answer your question, why would someone have a living trust? You would have it for probate avoidance primarily because most other things you can do, such as helping us with taxes, helping us have professional management for future generations. You can do both of those things in a living or a testamentary trust. And I guess we'll take it from there when we get back.
That's right. We'll take a break and a lot more to come. It's 3:13. You're listening to the Money Matters Radio Network.
I find my limo driver, this will take us to the show. I've been made some plans for later on tonight.
Over the last 2 years, we have lived through some very dramatic economic times. If this has left you wondering and worrying about your retirement, you're not alone. I'm Eric Spent, financial advisor at Strategic Financial Partners. My team has over 30 years of experience helping people address a full range of financial issues, including how to make your money last throughout retirement. For a free consultation or an invitation to one of our client workshops, please call me at 781-788-4671. Don't waste another minute worrying about your financial future. Call Eric Spent at 781-788-4671.
Eric Spint is a registered representative of New England Securities. Securities and investment advisory services offered by NES, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC, and a registered investment advisor. Branch office 800 South Street, Suite 505, Waltham, Mass., 02453. Strategic Financial Partners is a separate entity of NES. Log on to MoneyMattersBoston.com to find a Money Matters Radio Network affiliate near you.
Mark, someone is staring at me.
What, like making eyes at you?
Yeah, I guess.
Where? Over there?
Oh, behind you. He's sort of small, like a little stack of money, and he has these big eyes, like googly eyes. He's staring at me.
You sound like you're sort of enjoying this.
Well...
That's it. No, I'm looking.
Oh!
What, that? That's the money we could be saving with Geico.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance. To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com.
Do you have questions or need help with your current or pending mortgage? Rob Gallagher of Ross Mortgage in Westboro has over 30 years of experience in the retail mortgage industry. Rob and the team at Ross Mortgage have proficient loan officers, processors, and underwriters waiting to assist you. Ross Mortgage is driven by excellence, respect, ethics, and teamwork. Contact Rob at Ross Mortgage by calling 877-811-5508 or visit them at rossmortgageco.com.
I have aging parents, and I hear a lot about how one parent can lose almost all of their assets when the other parent unexpectedly enters a nursing home. Is this true, and should I really be concerned about it?
It absolutely is true, and yes, you should be concerned about it. I'm Todd Lutzke, a partner at the law firm of Cushing & Dolan, and your Wednesday morning co-host of Money Matters, and very little bothers me more than when I see how one spouse is left to struggle financially because the other spouse had to enter a nursing home. The facts are that the healthy spouse is given the home and $104,400 to live on the rest of her life, while all the rest of the assets are allocated to the institutionalized spouse. This is just one of many personal financial situations that people find themselves in when a nursing home enters the picture and no planning has been done. To learn more about how to protect your spouse from these last-minute Medicaid catastrophes, please call me, Todd Lutzke, at 866-353-7287. Remember, the longer you wait to call, the harder it is to protect your assets. That number again is 866-353-7287.
It's the Money Matters Radio Network. Call in toll-free to ask your financial questions at 888-205-2263 or log on to moneymattersboston.com.
It's the Money Matters Radio Network, 3:17, and it's your mid-afternoon edition, 58 degrees, still raining outside, I guess, for another, 12, 24 hours or so. We're on day three. Is it day three of this crazy rain?
You know, I think I brought this. Was last Wednesday this bad? I thought I remember coming in the rain.
But it was like 90, well, like humidity factor was really high.
Yeah, I thought I brought it with us again today, and I apologize, folks, for coming into Boston and bringing this with me.
Brendan King, Estate Preservation Law Office, is with us every Wednesday, Worcester, Massachusetts. No, you didn't, because I'm pretty sure this is day three of this nonsense.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I guess I don't mind so much during the, you know what it was? I actually brought the sign, because I think we had rain in the beginning of the week and at the end of the week, but not so much at the middle of the week. So maybe I parted it last week.
You could have.
Yeah, possibly.
All right, we'll give you
possibly.
That. We'll give it to you. We're talking about trust today, and before the break, we were talking about revocable and, of course, the revocable living trust and how that all works. So take it away.
So I think what we were saying is that, you know, we could have a trust in our will. And so the big difference, to answer your question on why you would have a living trust, is really for avoiding probate in that situation, because you could do a lot of the same things that you could with a living trust, with a testamentary trust, but it's one of those things, why would you want to have everything go through probate? And in fact, that trust would be subject to probate too. So you would have to administer the estate. The estate would then, the executor would then hand off the assets of the estate to the trust upon the completion of the estate administration. At that point, the trustee would then, of the testamentary trust, would take over and still be subject to the probate court jurisdiction. So it's almost like you're creating a super probate. Mm-hmm. So for most of us, there are times when we do that, but for most of the times these days, what we typically do is set up that living trust to keep things out of the public sector and keep things more private. And those we call those private express trusts. They're private, and privacy's means a lot of people, especially when you talk about their assets. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it's amazing what people will talk to you about. But, you know, if they're showing you their asset sheet, you know, they probably, I mean, there's a lot of things I'm sure they would rather do that would be surprising, that would be less uncomfortable for them than exposing their assets, you know. And so, you know, that stuff people want to keep private. And it's good to do so, too, because when things are public, amounts are made aware. And when amounts are made aware, sometimes that creates a curiosity. And amounts, we were just talking about how amounts of money can create litigation. And whether it's the Jackson family or the Jones family, whatever it is, you know, that amounts of money really can create curiosity. And everyone was, of course, left out. And not only just left out of the will, but it was a mistake. You know, oh, they forgot me. So when you are leaving someone out of your will, ladies and gentlemen, just remember to specifically omit them.
Really? Because if we don't specifically omit them, they can take it?
Well, what they'll do is they'll say that they were unintentionally omitted and it was a mistake. And then, of course, that's where litigation comes into play. And then when you have litigation, you have settlement. And settlement usually means a peace for the person who is making the allegation, because what you're trying to do is prevent things from going to trial and spending money on lawyers and that sort of thing. So a lot of times, you know, what we'll end up seeing in probate litigation is settlement, and, you know, you don't really feel good about it, but the alternative is to take it to trial and spend more money on the litigation than you would in just settling the case for what you really don't want to settle it for.
So, Brendan, what are the chances then of somebody saying they were left out and then going and getting their hands on some of this money?
Well, you know, it really has a lot to do with this level of sophistication a lot of times of the heirs or the beneficiaries. You know, when you're dealing with lots of money, you know, I think it's pretty common for some of these families to have lawyers just swimming around, hanging around.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, all they need to do is say, hey, does this sound right to you? And they'll say, no, let's go for it. And they'll throw in and throw down, as we say. Mm-hmm. And the fight's on. So, again, all the more reasons to stick to that trust, to that living trust, and for that purpose. Another thing that we use trust for, and I mentioned it as a little bit of an aside, is for estate tax planning. And one of the things that we talked about a little bit last week when we were going over the intake sheet that I had and was the aspect of looking at the assets, the value of the assets. And, of course, we touched a little bit on the estate tax, which is one of the transfer taxes that we have that's separate and apart from the income tax system that we have in place, and taxes of the size of one's estate when one passes away. So with respect to that, one of the aspects that we talked about is when we have a husband and wife situation, very common situation where we'll set up a trust for each of them, and typically it's a living trust. And what we'll attempt to do is that one of the things that will spouses do receive is an ability, or really anyone receives, is an ability to pass a certain amount of assets to the next generation before the estate tax comes. It's a credit, or in Massachusetts, estate tax. We call it a threshold.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're trying to do oftentimes is that if we have the I love you wills, in which we typically see is I love you, honey, I leave you everything. But if we leave everything to our surviving spouse, what will end up happening is the surviving spouse will take the assets, no problem, but will lose the first to die spouse's credit amount, free tax amount that they could have used. Because we have something in estate taxes between spouses called the marital deduction. So I can leave my wife as much as I want, no tax on my death. She can do the same upon the first of us to die. But the problem is then we have the entire marital estate passing to the next generation through one tax credit, where I had one, but because I didn't use it when I died, we lost it. So what we attempt to do is set up something called credit shelter trusts, so that I leave assets to my spouse in trust, and they're sheltered. So in other words, my spouse could be the successor trustee of my trust and the beneficiary. She has access to the assets on my side of the estate, but she's not receiving the assets directly. She's receiving them in trust with a separate tax ID number, and the idea is to prevent those assets, or at least a good chunk of those assets, from being included in her estate when she dies. So we're actually using two tax credits. The idea is to you get more assets tax-free to the next generation for estate taxes, and we use trust for that. That's how we do it.
See, everybody, this is why you need the professional to do these things, because you wouldn't normally know this on your own.
Oh, no,
I mean, that's crazy. You would never know that.
No, it's not something that you're picking up and when you're reading The Far Side. I miss The Far Side.
The Far Side. You don't know that.
Yeah, or you know, reading The Funnies or doing crossword puzzles. It's not stuff. I mean, you certainly would read it. You know, you can go online and read about this stuff
or
articles in the journal.
The way
certainly
you're explaining and the way it works, we don't know these things.
No, and I think that's the whole point. The whole point to this stuff and to, you know, me coming out and talking about this and to doing the seminars that I do is just kind of getting that information out there, because when people are aware of it, they'll do it. Most likely they will go ahead and have that stuff done, because no one wants to pay more tax than they have to. Certainly, you know, there's I believe there's a saying, there's no patriotic duty to pay more taxes than you have to. You pay your taxes, and that's what you're supposed to do. But if you can take advantage of certain credits that you have, instead of leaving things in a way that would allow you to pay more, why do that?
Right.
You know, when you can just go get some advice. And this is the problem that I have with certain companies that are out there that just sell documents, is that you don't know how to apply the documents. The documents are the tools, but, you know, if you don't have the issue diagnosed or know even about the issue, you don't know what tool to use. So, you know, to say that you can go online and get your own will, which
right.
we have a lot.
But, yeah, that's people talking about that, wondering if it, you know, is this okay? Can I go online and make a will?
You know,
it sounds kind of dicey.
It is. I mean, you know, I think we talked about it before. I mean, we could perform our own, you know, surgeries, I suppose, if we want. And we just, you don't do it. I could try to change the oil in my car. I'm not going to do it.
This is serious stuff.
Yeah. Well, it's serious money. It's serious money because the estate tax, for instance, can put a good bite in the size of your estate. And so, you know, when you're talking about those kinds of things, people always wonder about costs. Well, I always say, well, what does it cost you to not do it? You know, you're talking about being, you know, penny wise and dollar foolish. You know, if you realize that you're going to end up losing or spending an extra $300,000 in estate taxes when you could have spent a couple thousand bucks to prevent it, it's a pretty good investment, you know. You know, if we're talking about growing money, which I hear a lot of people on the show talk about growing money, that's great. But we also have to protect it, too. Because if you grow it and you grow it and you double the size of something, what good is it if you lose half of it?
Right.
You know?
And you're also dealing with a lot of relationships, too, and close relationships and family members.
Oh, absolutely.
And really important relationships here.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the more you do now, the less your kids are going to have to do, or whoever you're going to leave it to, nieces, nephews. And it's not a fun thing to do, to administer an estate. The better that you leave a situation, the less work they're going to have to do, and the less work, and not only that, the less chance of fighting, because everything will have been organized and everything will go smoothly. These things, you know, always are going to have their set of bumps in the road, but they'll have a lot fewer bumps in the road. And a lot of times you can predict those bumps in the road if you have proper planning ahead of time. And you've kept up with it. It's not just, again, do it, put it on the shelf for 15 years, and then think you're cool. It's maintenance. It is. It's landscaping. You know, you can't just cut your lawn at the beginning of summer, you know, turn the hose on, you know, with the front lawn, put out the slip and slide and say, hey, I'm done.
And put it away.
And done for the season.
And, you know, you've got to know, if you're making out a will, you know, you're doing the estate planning, you've got to know that there's people out there that may come out of the woodwork, and you've got to kind of know in the back of your head who they're going to be,
yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, come on. Every family's got those people floating around.
Absolutely. And we have those discussions. We have those frank discussions. And a lot of times it's painful for people because they are talking about maybe their kids, or they're talking about, you know, people who are very close to them. A lot of times we'll get, you know, people who are caretakers who they feel that, you know, that they're being cared for because these people are expecting to get something in the will. You know, it's a tough situation because, you know, they do appreciate the company, and a lot of people get lonely as they get older. It's tricky. It's very tricky.
And I'm sure remarrying, really got to throw a dagger into everything.
Yeah. I mean, that's a very typical situation. And I'm sure at some point it was probably atypical, but it's probably, you know, to have what used to be typical situation is probably atypical now. I mean, usually we are dealing with blended families or second marriages, and so we'll have questions on my worksheet on premarital agreements and talking about whose kid is whose, and biologies and adoptions and all that kind of stuff.
And
really
then prenups, that's a whole
and
other
prenups,
thing.
And prenups, yeah.
That's huge.
Comes up often in our office, you know, and there's that checkbox on that intake sheet. We ask about prenups because, you know, again, you can certainly leave more than you said in your prenup, but if there is a prenup, I'd like to read it, review it. How far out are we? What is it, a good prenup? Because, you know, prenups come in all shapes and sizes, and good and bad. So.
Hey, if you're going to sign a prenup, you're going to make a prenup, it better be a good one.
It better be a good
one. For both sides.
Yep. Absolutely.
Okay, we're going to take a break, and of course we will be back. It's 3:29, and you're listening to the Money Matters Radio Network.
Springtime in the backyard. Brought to you with a little help from Ace. For a limited time, buy a Miracle-Gro liquifeed kit for only $15.99 and get a $6 mail-in rebate, limit 2. A canopy chair on sale for $19.99 and more. Use your Ace Rewards card and earn points. Plus, get expert advice to save you time and money. Now that's a value. Hurry in to Ace, the helpful place. Prices good at participating stores while supplies last. See store for details.
Welcome to Progressive Theater, sponsored by Progressive Auto Insurance.
Luke, once I'm on that plane, I'll never see you again.
I'm not good at goodbyes, doll, but here's this. Go to progressive.com for auto insurance. They offer free things like 24/7 live support, concierge claim service, and could save you hundreds.
Hundreds?
Way more than a hill of beans, kid.
Oh, Luke.
You could save hundreds. Call 1-800-PROGRESSIVE or go to progressive.com today.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and its affiliates, Mayfield, Ohio. Concierge claim centers not available in all states. Prices vary based on how you buy.
This business is harder than anything I've ever done in my life.
Meet Kim Ema. She sells tasty desserts out of her treats truck all over Manhattan.
Managing cash flow is really important because things are always changing. Let's say I have a really big event coming up. I'm probably going to use my Visa Business credit card. And then there are weekly expenses where it just makes a lot of sense to use my Visa Business debit card.
Learn how Visa Business helps Kim manage cash flow in ways checks can't. Visit visa.com/gobiz. More small businesses go forward with Visa.
Hey, this is Dave calling in from MoneyMattersBoston.com here. Verizon and many other employers have come out with early retirement packages, and older workers have a very limited amount of time to make an informed decision. How much severance are you being offered? How does the offer affect your pension? Does the offer include health insurance? These are critical points to consider before you make a decision. Call us at 781-433-0001 and receive our free report, Evaluating an Early Retirement Offer. You should act quickly as you have to make a decision within 2 weeks of receiving your package. 781-433-0001. We can help you make an informed decision. This early retirement offer could be a great opportunity, and we can help you understand that opportunity. Call now for our free report called Evaluating an Early Retirement Offer. That's 781-433-0001. Again, 781-433-0001. prepare yourself for this critical offer. 781-433-0001.
You want pain relief that's fast? You want pain relief that's strong? Then you want Advil Liquid Gels. They're faster and stronger on tough pain than Tylenol Rapid Release Gels. Advil Liquid Gels. They rush real liquid relief right to wherever you hurt, so you can forget about your pain and get back to your day. Advil Liquid Gels. Liquid fast. Advil strong.
Brands are trademarks of their respective owners. Use as directed.
Boston's fastest growing financial news station, the Money Matters Radio Network. Visit us on the web at moneymattersboston.com.
We are the Money Matters Radio Network because money does matter. 3:33 June night, your mid-afternoon host along with Brendan King, my co-host, every single Wednesday from 3 until 4 o'clock. And yeah, we're talking about trust today. If you have questions about trusts, maybe you're the executor. You know, maybe you're the person who has the trust. The studio line, 888-205-2263. Because Brendan is breaking it all down for us.
Dissecting the trust.
And you were saying, you know, you go out and make presentations, yeah. And you get a full house.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this stuff is, you know, people, I always kind of chuckle because I think in the legal field we're probably looked at as, you know, some of the more boring, one of the more boring areas. And it's an intellectual area, but... You know, I'm always shocked at how much interest there is from the public on it. And the reality is people need this. And the reality is I don't think there are the number of lawyers out there specializing in this that are probably needed to fill that demand. But it's good news, obviously, for us who do it. But it is something that, you know, we do fill rooms with, and people are constantly asking us to speak on the topic, and just different aspects of the topic. And what makes it really tricky is that, the laws on it change so much. Mm-hmm. The estate tax laws change. The laws with respect to nursing homes, you know, and preparing for the nursing home and being able to give
that's
assets.
That's a big one, isn't it?
It changes, yeah. And that stuff changes. And, you know, there's so many aspects to what it is that we do that, you know, are constantly evolving, that you know, we have to constantly stay up on it, and certainly, you know, a good part of our time is educating ourselves, even, you know, just to keep up on that stuff. And we're on listservs and watching what other lawyers are doing and how their successes are and some of the things that they've done, and certainly going to those CLEs, those continuing legal education courses, and listening to tapes, and, you know, that stuff's real important because, you know, it is cutting edge. It's somewhat odd because trust law is old, but at the same time, the other aspects of what we do are, you know, cutting edge.
And it's become hip now, yeah, in a way, Brendan, yeah, because we were talking about this
square
off air. Well, yeah, but, you know, we were just saying this off air that, you know, we're all living longer.
Yeah.
And this is a big deal. I mean, we're living almost 30 years past retirement.
Yeah.
Who would ever think this would happen?
Oh, I know. My father was talking to me the other day about some retirement issues, and I just always tell him I'm just never going to retire. I mean, I just don't see, and I'm fortunate enough to be in a profession where, you know, I have my own firm and I have a great staff, a great partner. And we can do this for as long as we want.
Yeah.
We have the rule of, you know, the day I wear my wife's shoes into work and I've lost it, then it's my last day officially. That's when I put my notice in.
That's great.
But, you know, beyond that, I mean, you really almost have to. And I hear, you know, when I listen in to the different programs, you hear the financial advisors saying the same thing. They're running into the same issues that people are living longer. Outliving your money is the big concern these days.
That's huge.
It is huge. And you know, so one of the biggest things and one of the biggest hits that we see is the nursing home factor, you know, and being prepared for that, being prepared to pay for that or to protect your assets in those situations, or is disability. I mean, things happen in life, and to get all those things that, you know, set up or all your ducks in a row, is a very important thing, because I can tell you when I've had clients go to the ER or whatever it is that they're doing, or they're in an ambulance, I will get calls from them later and say, Brendan, and I don't know if this is a good or bad thing. They always say, you know, I think of you. And the ones who have done it say, you know, I think of you and I'm really glad we got it done. Or the ones that haven't have thought of me and say, you know what, meant to get back to you, and now I'm getting back to you because everything's okay. And of course, you do have the situations where they didn't do it and it wasn't okay, and that's kind of its own mess and its own situation. But, you know, just a little forecasting, when stuff like that does happen, you know, people do feel good when you have it done, because if you're in that situation, you feel yourself, you know, and you're here in the ambulance and you're the one that's in the back, or something's happened, or if you're on the other side and it's maybe a spouse and you've done planning together, it's certainly nice to know that you don't at least have to think about that mess, you know, because you've got stuff in place.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes life a heck of a lot easier. One of the hardest things that we see is dealing with surviving spouses when they come in, and the last thing that they want to do is sit with us and talk about things like disclaimers and all these, like, you know, post-mortem estate planning and all these things that we, you know, sometimes have to talk to them about. And it's tough. They don't want to. They just want to, you know, do what it is their day to day. They're living day to day without their spouse.
Yeah.
You know, and they're telling you stories how they can still smell their spouse on the pillow and all these things. And you're saying, okay,
yeah.
But now getting back to this, it's hard.
Yeah.
And so to have that stuff already set so that you can help and maybe jump in a little bit more and they don't have to do as much is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely a good thing. With that, I also wanted to kind of jump back. And one of the things I hear quite often is, you know, Brendan, how do I fund a trust? That's a big question we always get, because I want to step back and just describe what a trust is, because I think that sometimes people think that this trust is something we actually build with a hammer and nails and you actually put things in it. And really what it is quite often, you know, we'll sign a document, a living trust. We'll sign an agreement, if you will, because that's what a trust is it's an agreement. And between the person who sets it up, the grantor, donor, settlor, whatever you want to call them, and the trustee. And they're saying, okay, this is what we're agreeing to do. And once the document is signed and is in existence, simultaneously, you know, there's some property put in it, because a trust needs to have property, because you're actually splitting, as I said before, the property. So what are you splitting? The agreement's there, but you have to split something.
Right.
And certainly you can add things to it. And so what I would say is, if, you know, if I had the Brendan J. King money market and I had a trust agreement, I could change the title on that. Okay. And all it is me going to the bank. Instead of it saying Brendan J. King money market, it would say Brendan J. King, trustee of the Brendan J. King 2007 revocable trust under agreement dated July 27, 2007, okay? That would be the new title of the money market. It's me as trustee of my trust. That's all trust funding is. It's just changing the name or the title on something to the name of the trust, and that trust is typically executed by an agreement, you know, or set up by a written agreement, I should say. It doesn't have to be, but that's typically what's, you know, go ahead and try to enforce an oral trust, and it just doesn't really happen. So you usually sign an agreement, and that becomes the trust. Now, what's the tax ID number? How is it taxed is another question we get, and that certainly depends. A classic lawyer answer, it depends. and typically in a revocable living trust where I'm my own trustee while I'm alive, it's just simply my Social Security number. So I'm actually being taxed directly on those assets, as I always have for income tax purposes. So I report everything on my 1040, or being a mass resident, my Form 1, you know, for state income tax purposes.
Mm-hmm.
And everything gets 1099 to me. I'm under my social, and that's how I report it. When I die, at that point, the trust becomes irrevocable, and now we'll have a separate tax ID number. And the successor trustee can apply for that, and you get a separate tax ID number, because from that point on, there's a new taxpayer in town. I've passed away. My Social Security number is gone.
Right.
And so now income, it gets reported at that point in that scenario. So, again, that is just a living revocable trust where I'm the trustee. But you can really set up a situation where the taxation of trust, it's a whole other level of understanding, is, you know, how trusts are taxed. It's a pretty deep area, but, you know, generally speaking, your living revocable trusts are tax neutral. You know, tax as you know, so nothing changes there either. So there's no scariness to, oh, am I going to have to do another tax return on that or whatever. It's just everything kind of dumps onto your 1040. It's not an issue at all.
Okay.
So,
good to know.
Yeah, good to know. Just because these are some of the things that people get hesitant about setting up, you know, this simple living revocable trust. And it's really not that scary. The other thing that we always find is, you know, Brendan, how much should we have to, you know, before we set this up? Do I have to be, you know, a Kennedy or Rockefeller or whatever?
Right, that would be the first thing I would think.
Yeah, we do get those questions a lot, and absolutely not. I mean, it's, you know, we have, you know, our typical client is the client, you know, being from, Worcester. We have the three-decker. And, you know, that
that's a good investment right now, by the way, the multifamily.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, I spent a lot of years in a three-decker in Worcester.
Nice.
And so basically, you know, the person who owns, you know, their home and small amount of cash, they want to keep that stuff out of probate. Or maybe, just maybe, they have a special needs child that they can't just give it to. They can't put it in their names. Or maybe they have a child who's a spendthrift or a child who's in bankruptcy. Mm-hmm. These same trusts that you set up, that you fund while you're alive, avoids probate and then will continue on for the benefit of the beneficiaries, your children or nephew, nieces, or whoever it is that you end up wanting to benefit, and those things can stay in trust. I think we'll probably end up talking about that in a little bit as I think we're heading towards a break.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. Yeah. I like where that's going.
Yeah.
A lot of people want to know about that, too.
Absolutely.
They want to pass stuff down, and they want to make sure that these people get what they're sending down.
That's right, and they get it, and they keep it. You know,
yeah.
It stays in the family,
and
or the bloodline, if you will.
Nobody else comes out of the woods.
Keep it with the kin.
We like it that way. All right, we'll be back. We're talking to Brendan King today from Estate Preservation Law Offices, and it's 343. It's the Money Matters Radio Network.
Sterling Financial is committed to creating and executing quick, appropriate investment plans that make sense to you. In fact, the most important asset Sterling Financial provides is personalized service, a way of making the investment process easy and enjoyable. To speak with Jonathan Price or any member of the Sterling Financial team, call 617-558-3213. That's 617-558-3213 or online at www.sterlingfg.com.
The sea salts of the world vary in color, taste, and intensity. Now Campbell's has found one that tops them all. It's naturally flavorful. Adding it helps us use less salt than before in Campbell's tomato soup. That famous, familiar flavor, as delicious as ever, now with less salt. Thanks to a very special sea salt in Campbell's tomato soup.
So many, many reasons it's so...
My mother only gets $500 a month Social Security and really relies on my dad's $2,000 a month pension to live on. And I've heard my mom also could lose a significant portion of my dad's pension as it'll be used to pay for his nursing home care. Is this true? And if so, approximately, how much will my mom get to keep?
Your concerns are once again justified. I'm Todd Lutsky, a partner at the law firm of Cushing & Dolan and your Wednesday morning co-host of Money Matters. Very little bothers me more than when I see how one spouse is left to struggle financially because the other spouse had to enter a nursing home. As it is true that the state will allocate a portion of the income to the healthy spouse, with the balance being allocated to the institutionalized spouse. The general rule is that the healthy spouse is entitled to keep approximately $1,712 of income per month. The amount is known as the minimum monthly maintenance needs allowance. The balance of the institutionalized spouse's income must be used to pay for his care. In your mom's case, that would translate into a loss of almost $800 a month income. To learn more about how to protect your spouse from these last-minute Medicaid catastrophes, please call me, Todd Lutsky, at 866-353-7287.
Your lovely tree, attacked by insects. Stop them with the proven science of Bayer Advanced Tree and Shrub Protect and Feed. Its special dual-action formula delivers 12-month insect protection. Plus now, it provides slow-release feeding, all in one easy step. Mix and pour the no-spray formula and your tree is shielded, roots to top, for stronger and more beautiful trees. We don't hate bugs, we just love trees. Bayer Advanced. Better science, better results. BearAdvance.com.
Who's ready to hear some fun facts about GEICO? All right, let's give it a go, shall we? First, over 3 million drivers switched to GEICO last year. Second, GEICO received a customer satisfaction rate of 97%. Third, GEICO has been providing car insurance for over 70 years.
Whoa, hold up a tick, Nick. These aren't fun facts at all. These are financially sound facts. We've been duped.
GEICO. 15 minutes could save you hundreds on car insurance.
The Money Matters Radio Network, your exclusive home for Joe Mangiacati, June Knight, Dennis Vaughn, and Chuck Nilosek.
Boston's home for finance. The Money Matters Radio Network.
It's the Money Matters Radio Network. It is 3:47, mid-afternoon edition. Dating, just sort of dating myself just a little bit there, Brendan. Talking about the old days of radio when you get to bring your own records into
records.
The studio.
Every once in a while, I'll mention the word record. And
yeah.
I'm not that old, but I work with pretty young people.
Yeah.
And they just start giggling. I mean, like, the word record is just
They've
so,
never really even had one in their
hand.
Out.
They're
think.
Coming back, though. They're
yeah,
coming back.
You know,
I listen.
I use them. I have a record player. I do the whole
you
thing.
You do?
Yeah. They're pretty popular.
I remember in the 90s, you know, that vinyl was making a huge pushback, and there was whole vinyl sections the second, you know, UCD stores, and, you know, I used to kind of traipse through there, and a lot, they had, and vinyl sections, I noticed every year were getting bigger and bigger, and, yeah, it's a huge market for that.
I got to tell you, too, there's something about putting a needle on a record. It just sounds better.
I'll put the needle on the racket.
There you go. So the drum beats go like this. See, I can finish that one. And, you know, honestly, it's it had a sound to it.
Yeah.
It had
a
quality. I mean, yeah, there was some crackling and stuff, but the bass was deeper.
Oh, yeah.
It's warm.
There's something
it's
about
warm.
Yeah.
And, Matt, you're what, 26?
Yeah, yeah.
So, and you like playing vinyl.
Yep.
This is amazing.
Yeah, that's cool stuff.
That's
yeah.
great. We'll talk about the Atari recorder machine later on. That's a whole different
place. You still
place.
Can't
you
beat
go
Space
in.
Invader and Asteroids. They're still the best games out there. They really are.
Oh, yeah,
yeah.
Space Invader.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Good stuff,
are
yeah.
they still floating around?
I'm
Anybody
sure
know?
They must be, yeah. In fact, a few years back, my brother got me some sort of retro game that you could play some of that old stuff on. And it's just so funny because I watched my son on his Wii. And he's like fighting these battles, like he's in battle, and I see him sitting there like almost sweating, like he's engaged in combat with some of these things, and I really think of how basic that stuff was when we were playing, you know, one joystick, a button, and a little needle going back and forth on the bottom of a big wooden TV on the floor.
You can also go back to things like Pac-Man, too,
oh,
in
yeah.
the 80s.
Miss Pac-Man.
Mean, that was like high
She's
tech
my first
Pac-Man,
crush,
wasn't
yeah.
it? She was your first crush? Oh, that's great. That's great.
Miss Pac-Man. I mean, she was available. It was MS, period, wasn't it? Or MISS? Or was it
yeah, you had to be correct.
Yeah.
You had to be politically,
I think they were
sexually correct.
Yep, they're moving it forward then, too. Mm, yep.
Those were the days. I'm telling you, go down to those arcades and you play Pac-Man.
Oh, yeah. Or even, like, you know, which you don't see anymore, is, like, you know, those classic pizza joints that have Frogger. And, you know, to reinvent, like, you know, the whole Seinfeld episode with just the right amount of grease on the handle. And, you know, and George was trying to set the new record on that bad boy.
Have you ever gotten one of the claw with the animal inside the huge glass box?
Oh.
Have you ever gotten one of those animals? Because I don't know anybody that has.
No, those things, I think, they had the grip of a weak, you know, 95-year-old gentleman. And, you know, they'd go in there and you try to get the biggest thing, and it honestly would just, like, you know, it had there was no
it's
strength
rigged.
Behind
it's
it.
It's rigged.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I think it is. I have never seen anyone pull anything out of it. It's kind of like when they when you go to the fairs where they have the balloons and you try to throw the darts at it, and amazingly you can't hit one balloon.
Well, some really shady guy with a beard and a white van pulls up to collect all the cash and change in those machines too.
Right, right.
You know?
I mean, you know, to get one of those huge stuffed, I don't even know why you'd want one. You know, those huge stuffed animals they have there.
Well, you
all
think
like,
you're getting one for your kid.
Yeah.
You know, you might be at Friendly's or something getting, you know, some kind of a heart attack breakfast. And you think, oh, let me get a little something for Johnny. And then next thing you know, you're 10 bucks in, and you're upset.
Yeah, then you got to make it back. It's gambling.
Yeah,
I can
legal
get this back.
Gambling. Now you're upset. Your blood pressure's up.
And you end up paying $75 for a big Yogi the Bear, you know?
And you've got to go home, and you've got to make a will, and you've got to go
That's
do
right.
the trust, be the
That's
executor
right.
of the trust.
That's right. And we were talking about leaving things to kids, and whether it's Yogi the Bear, and those Yogi the Bears were just had all those white little white styrofoam things. They weren't soft and snuggly. They were just,
yeah.
You
if
know.
It if it broke or busted.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, you're
and
done.
And the legs always did, you know, because they had no matter what kind of animal they had elephant legs. They were always squared off legs, you know, that would just snap off.
Right. They wouldn't stand up.
But if you are going to leave a stuffed animal, but no, really, stuffed animals don't belong in trust. But generally speaking, you know, we talked about leaving things to kids and or nieces, nephews, or cousins, whoever you're going to use. And in some cases, parents, you know. So a lot of times people want to leave stuff back up the ladder instead of down the ladder.
Mm-hmm.
You want people maybe thinking of, in particular case I've got right now, I was just working on it today, where a single woman would wanted to, if she were to pass away, very close to her mother, wanted to leave assets for the benefit of her mother. But certainly, given her mother's age, we weren't going to leave them outright to her, because if she did have a nursing home stay, they were going to be left in a trust that was discretionary, so that if mom needed to have any kind of care, these assets would be there to supplement anything she needs, not supplant any government benefits she might be entitled to, i.e. Medicaid or MassHealth in the state. So, you know, leaving things in trust, these same trusts can continue on. These same agreements can continue on either up the ladder or down the ladder, future generations, and really can protect assets. And we talked about one scenario with the nursing home for a parent, or if someone has a child with, say, Down syndrome, and that child is going to be on Medicaid or benefits or SSI, Section 8 housing, whatever it ends up being. These assets can be held in trust to prevent those individuals, those children or whoever, to allow them to collect the maximum amount of benefits they'd be entitled to collect those public entitlements without having to lose them by virtue of owning the asset or owning a significant amount of income that the asset generates by having it left to them outright. A lot of those programs that they're on are there are asset limits to them or income limits to them.
Oh, sure.
And by leaving assets to them, what you're essentially doing is knocking those individuals off those programs, having to use those assets or spend them down, and then having to reapply once they're gone. Now, those assets and those programs that people are typically benefiting from don't handle everything in life. You know, they don't, and we'll do a show on special needs planning. But, suffice it to say, they don't handle every aspect of a child's life. For instance, if a child wants to take a trip to Hampton Beach, and, you know, how are they going to do that? What money do they have to do that? So, you know, there are no government benefits that say if a child wants to go to Hampton Beach, is this a Hampton Beach fund? So this is what we have supplemental needs trust for. And so that is that particular case. Or we could have a child who is on their 10th marriage. And just, the parent is afraid that if they leave them the assets, it's just going to go right out to another spouse.
Mm-hmm.
So leaving assets in trust can help with that. Keeping things in the bloodline, preventing assets from, upon the death of a child, going to that child, that particular child's spouse, and then having that spouse remarry. Okay, so, you know, when people are thinking about keeping things in the bloodline, oftentimes they're thinking about keeping things in trust for the benefit. And it's not something necessarily that's the worst thing in the world. A lot of people will think, well, why do I want to tie my assets up? Why do I want my kid to have to go ask a trustee for permission? And I've got to tell you, I deal with trusts all day, and if I was to be left an inheritance, and I come from a big family, so that usually doesn't happen so much, but when if I were to be left a significant inheritance, I would say, listen, I'm in business for myself. I could be sued. You know, maybe I drive fast. Hey, leave my assets in trust. You know, name someone as a trustee, family member, your lawyer, your, you know, accountant, whoever it is that you can have as a trustee. If I need some money, I can go to them. But, you know, I've got my own assets that are subject to my own creditors. I like to have maybe a safety or a nest egg for safety. And that can be my inheritance. Parents can do things, or individuals can do things for people that they can't do for themselves. I couldn't necessarily take those assets and put them into a trust and protect them, at least not in Massachusetts, and be the beneficiary of that trust, the direct beneficiary of that trust.
Mm-hmm.
So parents or people who are leaving assets for the benefit of others should really think about how they want to leave the assets. It doesn't have to be just one and done. It doesn't have to be, okay, I'm going to leave it to them and let them do what they want. You know, there may be a lot of benefit to thinking about how to leave those assets and also tax benefits to that, too.
Oh, yeah.
Because if you leave something in a trust and if it's properly drafted, you can actually skip a generation for estate taxes. Okay, so my parents could leave me assets, and if I don't have ownership over those assets, if I pass away, those assets won't be part of my taxable estate, although I could benefit from them, and then they can go for my kids. So I don't have to include that in my estate for estate taxes. So good stuff like that. Taxes, keeping things in trust, keeping things safe, Keeping things in the bloodline, which is oftentimes, although a lot of people do like their in-laws a lot of times better than their own kids, or I've seen it.
Yeah, that happens.
You know? And oftentimes they'll say, oh, I'd rather have my daughter-in-law be my executive.
Oh, that's going to be tough.
I'm like, hey, you have, you know, if you want to have that discussion with her, that's fine. But you really want to think about, and that's another good point too, who should our trustees be? Trustees can always be, you know, obviously a lot of times on these living trusts, you're picking yourself. But you really, the biggest decision that you're ever going to want to make is who the trustee is going to be when you're gone, particularly if you're going to leave those assets in trust for the benefit of somebody else or some other people, because the trustee is the one who's going to be, I mean, there's no mystery to the word, trustee. You know, I've got to trust that person. You've got to have a lot of faith that that person's going to know, or that corporation or that entity, depending on who you pick, is going to know what it is you would have wanted had you been around to make those decisions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, carrying on the grantor's wishes a lot of times beyond the grave, so that, you know, would this be something your parent would have expected a payment for?
Mm.
Is this something that the trust was designed for? So knowing a lot about that and a lot about the individual is a big part of what we do when we're sitting down with a client, because we'll ask the client what their goals and objectives are and take notes on that stuff, because God forbid something happens, and if they've named us as a trustee, or if they've named maybe an entity or a corporation as a trustee, we'll be able to help them in determining and sit down with them, and so when that day does come, we can say this is what they had in mind.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's important to know that in carrying on the wishes. Was it the intent, even though you have a lot of discretion to pay it out, was it the intent of the grantor to provide Lamborghinis to their kids? No, probably not. Do they have the ability to do it? Maybe by the terms of the trust, but probably not what they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
So it's impossible to know every little thing that comes up, because time passes. Time is a long time sometimes for these trusts, and certain situations change, and so that trustee is really going to have to go through some situations that may not have been contemplated.
Okay, Brendan, give out your information so folks can get in touch with you.
Okay, we're at 71 Elm Street in Worcester, Massachusetts, and that is 508-751-5010. www.estatepreservationlaw.com.
And you travel, right?
That's right. That's right. We travel. We've got actually offices in Braintree, Cambridge, and Cape Cod and the islands.
Oh, okay.
So, we do travel, and we do go make home visits, just like doctors used to.
All right.
Yeah.
Brendan King, thank you so much. We'll see you back here again next Wednesday.
That's right. Thanks, Jim.
Go to the garage.
Yeah,
and
I'm going to go that way. Absolutely. Stay dry.
All right. That's it. That's it for me, actually. 3:59. This is the Money Matters Radio Network. 20 AM Concord, Boston, WPLM 1390 AM Plymouth, and WESO 970 AM Southbridge. Keeping an eye on your wallet from Boston to Springfield, the Money Matters Radio Network.
Hi, this is your Monday co-host, Rob Mitchell, the president and CEO of Coastal Finance. I wanted to take a moment to talk about our conventional mortgage division at Coastal Finance. In an ever-changing mortgage market, it is very important that you work with someone you can trust. Whether you are buying for the first time or refinancing.